Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, beyond tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.
Broadcasting live from the Raiders practice facility at the Intermountain Healthcare Performance Center. This is the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
Yeah, I think you guys asked a question the other day about our run game. Certainly our run game has improved, and Derek's been clean in the pocket a lot of the times. He's 31 of 34, as we talked about, and thought he had some clean pockets the other day. So they've certainly improved, but I think we're all working on improving day in and day out. What can we do better tomorrow that we didn't do today? And certainly they're a microcosm of our improvement throughout the entire team.
That's Rich Bisaccia, the Raiders interim head coach. And Lincoln, he was talking about the offensive line, and I had asked Rich about the improvement of the offensive line. I went back and watched Sunday's game against the Giants, and Andre James and Alex Leatherwood were really moving people in that game. And Andre James, not only that, but he was getting to the second level. He was just playing with a ferociousness, kind of a buzzsaw out there on Sunday. And it was the second game in a row that he's really delivered. He's had his two highest graded games against Philadelphia Eagles and then Sunday against the New York Giants. Alex Leatherwood's run blocking has been at a very high level, an acceptable level without question. Pass blocking still needs a little bit of work. But, you know, we're eight games into it for the Raiders. This is Andre James' first season as a starter. He's struggled, no doubt. I think we all expected that, and you've mentioned it, and you talked about it coming into the season. But your thoughts so far now on Andre James, and does it feel like he's turned a corner a little bit at center?
Well, I don't necessarily say turn the corner. The fact is that he still has to grow. There's still growth, even in his run game. We knew that he was a dominant run blocker. You saw that from his college days. Okay. And again, I've said all along, it's not so much the plays. I mean, it's a lot has to do with the scheme and the plays that you're calling that are more beneficial to this talent level. You know, the thing is that Alex has come a long way. He still has got some ways to go, but just being out there on the field, he's learning. He's learning what he can do. He's learning what his strengths, his skill set is going to be at, and he's getting better and better every game. And that's what you want. You want to see progression, not regression. So I think that's a good sign going forward.
Yeah, and you know, I'm going to quote you some Pro Football Focus numbers. I know you don't put everything into this, and I totally get that. But Andre James graded out as an 83.1 out of 100 overall. On Sunday, and 77 the week before. The six previous games was 45.5, 63.2, 34.4, 48.1, 58.2, 47.6, and then against Philadelphia and the Giants, 77 and 83. That's, you know, if at least in Pro Football Focus's eyes, that's, you know, he's played really well, especially compared to how he had been playing overall. And then on against the Giants, his run block grade was 88.3. Now, they're not into just handing out, you know, good grades, because as we've seen with just Andre James, he was in the 40s. You know, for most of the games this year in terms of the run blocking. But the last 2 weeks, last two games, it's been 74.4, 88.3. And, I know just watching film, I'm like, okay, he's playing a lot better in that game. It just seems like he's more confident, too. And, Lincoln, you brought this up yesterday, that he, you know, when you are a confident player, you're just going to play with a better command and more assertive and just more confidently and knowing what you're doing and being more aggressive and effective. And it just seems like, at least from that regard, it's moving in the right direction for Andre.
This game is mostly mental. Everyone has the physical gifts to be out there. They wouldn't be out there. It's mental. And the mental comes in from a couple of things. One, you have to know what you're doing. You have to know where you're supposed to go, and you have to know what you're supposed to do, your responsibility. Two, you have to be able to perform it at a high level, okay? So you got to have the confidence within you that I can do this. I can block this defensive end. Yes, he's strong, he's powerful, he leads the league in sacks, whatever. I can block him. And you go out there and you play with that sort of certainty. And also, three, wanting to be accountable to your other teammates. Look, nobody wants to let their teammate down. So when you're out there smashing around, especially at offensive line, what you want to make sure that you're doing is you're doing your job at the highest possible level, because you know the other four guys are going to be doing the job at the highest possible level. You don't want to be that one that lets them down. So you don't want to be the one that gets beat for a sack or, you know, a tackle for loss. When you do, you want to make up for it and come back. The fact is that's why we were talking about, even before the trade deadline, probably not making a play, probably not thinking about Richie Incognito getting back in. You don't need him right now, because all Coach Cable wanted to do is he wanted to have these guys learn how to play together. Settle the offensive line, the indecisiveness of who's playing where, settle them in and let them play. That's how offensive linemen get better.
Yeah, and I think specifically with Andre, it just seems like he does have a better idea of what it is that he's supposed to be doing. And to have expected him to do that and understand that day one as a starter was probably unrealistic.
Not fair.
Exactly. Not fair. And especially knowing that that's one of the reasons that the Raiders really needed and wanted Richie Incognito back as the starting guard alongside, one starting guard was going to be Richie Incognito, the other was going to be Denzel Good, bookending Andre James. Why? Well, they're good players, number one, but number two, they wanted that veteran leadership and understanding of what's going on in front of them to be able to help Andre James, and he never had that support, because they had to immediately go to two young players to replace Richie Incognito, who hasn't played a snap, and Denzel Good, who played the first half of the first game. So that support system was kind of taken away from Andre at a very early stage, and he's kind of had to go at it, on his own with two younger players around him. I just feel like watching him play now, he's just playing with an assertive level that, to your point, might indicate that he now knows what he's doing. And I want to get in your helmet when you were a young player and trying to figure out the difference between playing with an uncertainty of what you were supposed to be doing out there. Like, even though you kind of knew what you're supposed to be doing, there's still a little bit of doubt. It's your first time in the NFL, your first starting assignment, and you're playing more careful than maybe assertive. How different was it for you when you understood it completely what you're supposed to be doing, and how much faster did you play as a result?
Well, the thing was, is when it happened for me, it was one of those things coming in league. I overthought everything, overthought the play, overthought angles, overthought, okay, if I block him here, or the ball carrier is going to go there, or the ball's supposed to go here, just overthought too much. It's the last thing you want your athlete to do. If you're a coach or you're out there and your teammate, I don't want you to think. I want you to know what to do so you can go full speed. So that was the first thing you kind of overthought. And then once the game got more and more familiar with your responsibility, what you're supposed to do, we consider that calling the game slows down. By the time I left the game, it was almost like it was in a dream. It was that slow for me. I knew what I was doing. I knew I could do it at a top level. My body and mind was just beat up and fatigued. So, I mean, that's what took its toll. But the game really did slow down. There wasn't anything that a defensive end or defensive lineman could do to me that I hadn't seen before. You see what I'm saying? And it's going through the motions. There wasn't a defense I hadn't seen. I was a student of the game, so I learned schemes and everything else. So there wasn't any surprises when I went out there in the field. More times than not, I didn't even have to hear Rich give the call, because I knew by formation or personnel and what we were running. We just ran that many similar plays, right. It didn't have an extensive playbook. So the game slowed down, and then you just became effective. And it was like, you know what? We're going to tell you sometimes where we're running and see if we can stop it. That type of thing.
And then when it does slow down for you, it becomes, all right, are you physically strong enough fast enough. All those it becomes a physical game rather than a mental game, because you've already got the mental part of it conquered. And I kind of just feel like Andre's, you know, he's moving forward in that regard, because I just seen like a faster player, more confident player out there recently, and that's to be expected. And it goes to your point all along, which was just let him play.
I mean, you can micromanage him to a degree, but at the same point, you got to just let him play. There's going to be trials. You're going to take your lumps. Don't forget, those guys over there get paid too.
Yeah.
You know, and when you look at this collectively over the past month, you talk about the teams that you're playing against defensive tackles. I said in the Giants game, one of the keys is going to slow down those defensive tackles. They negated them for a great portion of the game. The only time you heard Leonard Williams' name is when he recovered that fumble at the end of the game. He didn't do anything else. I mean, they had a great game. You watch the film. I'm going to break down the run game a little bit more on the Silver and Black show this week. But you watch them. They're pushing people around. They're coming off the ball. They're aggressive. And that's what you want. I want you to play fast. Even if you make a mistake at times, I want you to play fast. And there was one time where Brandon Parker got beat underneath when he was blocking the defensive end. But he was able to seal him quickly that he didn't nullify the run. And Josh Jacobs was able to run around him for a large game.
All right, I don't want to give everything away that you're going to do on the show, but if I could get a quick overview based on what you saw Sunday on the film study of Alex Leatherwood, because that's a huge dynamic for the Raiders. You know, he was a 17th pick overall. They're counting on him, whether it's at right tackle or right guard, moving forward to be part of this offensive line for a long time coming. And so his improvement is vital. It's critical, really. What are you seeing from Alex, or what did you see from Alex?
If you go from game one to where we are, he's vastly improved.
Right.
Okay. He's learning himself, and he's learning the speed of this game at this level. What he has, you know, whether you want to go put him back at a tackle or leave him at guard, right now he's best suited for guard just by the way he plays. Now, he's got the footwork. He's capable with the footwork to play tackle. Don't get me wrong. It's just his hands placement. That's what he has to work on, and that's what he has to get used to, because he's used to trying to muscle guys, strong arm guys, and latch on and try to physical them out. Physical, you can't necessarily do that at tackle. Okay, you don't have the luxury. The Von Millers and the T.J. Watts, those guys are going to run into you. They're going to run around you.
Right.
So you know you're not going to have the luxury of just putting your arms out and latching on. That doesn't work like that. So there's still a lot of things that he has to learn, and I've often equated like being like a boxer. You know, learning how to jab, learning how to counterpunch and stuff like that. That's what you do at tackle. At guard, it's different because the defensive tackle and the guys are right up on you. You can literally sit up out of your stance and put your hands on them. More times than not, they're not, you know, they're going to have arm over and swim moves and stuff like that. But more times than not, defensive tackles don't like to expose their ribs like that, because they know guards, that the feisty guards especially, like my old buddy Steve Wisniewski, would punch the hell out of those ribs. If they got it lathered up, I mean, you would put those bad boys in barbecue sauce and get that ribs going. But you know, you don't have that. So that inside a phone booth, it's a lot tighter, a lot less space, a lot less places for you to go. And because you're surrounded by players on both sides, a lot of times there's not a gap to take in. Then you can muscle guys, you can latch on, because there's just not a whole lot of room.
Do you remember a player by the name of Randall McDaniel?
Oh yeah.
What made him, like, he is in the Hall of Fame, a tremendous guard, but what makes a good guard?
Flexibility, one, because you're going to have people all around your legs all the time, and there's going to be tight spaces, so you got to be able to maneuver and capture. But you also got to be strong to a point where, you know, some of the great ones like Will Shields and Wisniewski and all the guys that I loved and played with alongside of just knew how to perform in a tight space efficiently and didn't get beat often. So when you look at a defensive tackle, you look a lot of them and you watch a lot of times when teams go out of the gun, you'll see like defensive tackles get pushed, interior push, to try to push them off the point. Good guards wouldn't let that happen. You're not pushing me around. You're not going to outstrong me or outmuscle me. You know, it's rare that it happens. So you got to do more times. You got to run around to create your lane. And then that opens up opportunities for either passing lanes or sometimes even running quarterbacks. So it was learning how to work efficiently in a tight space. Those were some of the best guards that I've known.
by the way, Randall McDaniel, 6'4", 287, right?
Mm-hmm.
He ran a 10.6 100-meter dash. He was a track guy, too.
Yeah. You know,
that's not bad for an offensive lineman, obviously.
Not bad at all. And we're athletes. They don't give us a love, but we are athletes.
And a 50-second 400-meter dash. So, yeah, he was pretty good. But, you know, I don't know where it's going to all end up for Alex Leatherwood. It could very well be that, you know, he sticks at guard and it's good and it's fine. And they move forward with him at guard. You know, I know that there's ego involved and, oh, well, you drafted him to be a tackle. Now it's, you know, now he's
playing. That's nonsense. That's not his ego. That might be someone else's ego, but that's not his ego. Knowing the guy and talking with him, he just wants to play.
Yeah,
and he did it at Alabama. He played every position aside from a center.
Right.
You know, he played all four positions, so he just wants to be on the football field. Now, you know, you could take this in consideration. Brandon Parker is playing better. He still needs to learn how to stop the bull rush, mm-hmm. but that's another conversation for another day, as we talked about.
I think we're always going to have that conversation
about him. Yeah, until he finally does it. But, you know, right now, you know, Brandon Parker is still serviceable. I don't know if he's a long-term option. He keeps progressing the way he is. He might very well be because he'll be an inexpensive one, and there's ways that you can help him with this offense. But schematic-wise, if they improve their screen game like they've been doing and they improve their draw game like they've been doing, then there's a chance that Brandon Parker can work in this division, this league, at tackle. And kind so that might be an opportunity where your right side is already established for you.
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know, if they decide to stick with Leatherwood at right guard, you go out either in draft or sign a free agent right tackle and move on from there. I'm with you. When I said ego, I don't mean necessarily his ego or even Mike Mayock, who drafted him, or Tom Cable, you know, who stood up for him and advocated for him as a first-round draft pick. But I know that, you know, you can't worry about the critics, but there's going to be critics who say, oh, you wasted a first round pick on a tackle and had to move him to guard. My thing is this, Lincoln, who cares? Get the best five players, put them at their most ideal positions, and build the best offensive line that you possibly can. That needs to be the criteria and only objective, not where you drafted somebody or who you drafted him to be. Just find the best five, and you're going to always be in a good position if that's what you do, and that remains your objective.
That's absolutely right. I played with guys that started at one position, finished at another their career, and turned out to be pretty good at it. It's just you want the best players on the field regardless of where they are. If they're versatile enough to play tackle or guard, left or right, so be it. That adds versatility to your offensive line with things that you can do. But for the most part, you want your guys to be out there because you want to see these – you want to win football games.
Yeah, and getting – last thing about that, you know, the offensive line performance, specifically Andre and Alex – it's not like they were playing two slouches. The Philadelphia Eagles have a good defensive line, as do the New York Giants. It's one of the few things that the Giants do really well, even though I thought that defense was not bad at all for the New York Giants. I'm not really convinced that Daniel Jones is the guy. But it wasn't like those guys they played two games against two pretty good defensive lines. And all I'm saying is because there was so much, oh, should they make moves? Oh, should they replace guys? Oftentimes, I should say, Lincoln, patience is a key, especially with the offensive line. You can't just keep running guys in and out of the lineup unless you're just, you know, at dire straits. But if you have a belief in these guys and you understand it might be rough for a little while, but you believe in the process and what the ultimate outcome can be, you stick with it. Even amidst all the outside noise, and there was a lot of it, that this offensive line was a weak link. If you believe that you can get it from that to something much better, you stick with it. And that patience, to me, Lincoln, is starting to pay off.
Well, the thing is that you didn't get anybody hurt by trying with this experiment, okay? And you were able to win football games. You're going to take your lumps. You're not going to win them all. Okay, that's being unrealistic. You're not going to win them all, but you see a steady progression through all the, you know, distractions and everything that this team has gone through. You still see a steady progression to where the Raiders are becoming a better and better football team collectively. offensive line is starting to play better. Now we'll see how it rides out because they still got a ways to go. But, you know, this is a good sign going forward. When they're going to play teams like the Cowboys and the Bengals who have a high rush, they're going to need that. They're going to need that confidence. And the way that you get it is by playing and going out there and playing well.
It also tells you, too, it's a long season. It's 17 games. Let it play out. Especially, again, if you have a belief in those guys, let it play out, and good things can happen. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio 920 AM on a Thursday.
No one gets you closer to the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor and Lincoln Kennedy.
Well, I really thought we competed, you know, to the bitter end in all three phases. But certainly we would like to have had some plays back, you know, that we got ourselves in some good field positions and couldn't come out of there with touchdowns, came out of there with field goals. So that would be the one negative to some degree. But I think the thing that we preach are we ended up minus in the turnover margin, and we just didn't take advantage of our opportunities when we got them in the red zone. So other than that, I just was excited about the competitive edge in which we played with.
That's Raiders interim head coach Rich Bisaccia talking about what happened on Sunday. And by now, Thursday, it's in the rearview mirror. Lincoln, when you were playing, how quickly did you move on from a loss?
As quick as possible. Try to forget about it on the way home.
I mean, yeah, and you have to do it. It's just
– Oh, you know, there's no doubt about it. I mean, look, when you play badly, you play poorly – you realize it. You and in the case, and it's happened to me many times in my career, where you said one of them got away. Well, we shouldn't have lost to them, but you know, you take it as a lesson and you regroup, and you know, you're going to go about your business after that.
It's just how it has to be. You know, I know fans are like, oh, they need to, you know, act like it means more to them and everything. It does, but it doesn't do you any good to dwell on it because it's going to affect your performance the next time out. You know, in baseball, there's an old saying, don't make one bad at-bat turn into two bad at-bats or three bad at-bats. Forget about it and move on to the next one. And that's really what you have to do as a professional athlete. This isn't college football where one game, one loss might end your season, you know, in terms of the biggest goal of all, and that's the national championship. And really, when you think about that, there's only a couple teams, three teams in any given year that really have a realistic shot at doing that. In the NFL, as you mentioned, Lincoln, and you know, looking at the AFC standings, there's a whole bunch of teams that are 5-3 right now.
Yep,
I think there's one that's 6-2, and that's the Baltimore Ravens, who, by the way, the Raiders beat. That turned out to be a pretty darn big win for the Raiders. So they're within reach. They're where they, you know, need to be. It might not be where they want to be. Everyone wants to be undefeated or one loss. It's where they are, and where they are right now, Lincoln, puts them in great position to achieve the goals and objectives that they've set for themselves. Everything is out in front of them. As you get to this part of the year and you're in the hunt, how does that affect positively the locker room and the work ethic and the attention to details and things like that?
Well, you feel good that you're in position to achieve. I mean, and have success. You know, the fact is, you can start looking or start talking about the playoffs, just putting it in thought. You know, when you know you talked about the Ravens. The Ravens sit at 6-2. The Raiders are at 5-3. So, what has to happen? Obviously, the Ravens have to lose a game, and the Raiders have to continue to win before the tiebreaker even becomes a scenario. But you did show that you could play with a good football team. Now, the Ravens have gotten better since they first saw the Raiders. They're playing a whole lot better than they did in that first game, and they're still a force. You talk about their division, you know, they still got to play the Steelers. The Cincinnati Bengals did they beat them? I don't know who won that game, but did the Bengals beat the Ravens?
They did, yeah.
Is that one? Yeah. So okay, so you know, when you talk about division differences, we've got the Chiefs, Chargers, and Broncos. They got basically the Bengals to worry about because I don't really put too much emphasis in the Steelers anymore, and I know the Browns are really hurting if they're not able to figure it out. So the division is going to be a little bit more chaotic. So long story short, to answer your question, is that you start looking forward to games and where you're positioning. Now, ideally, you want to have as best record as you can going into the playoffs, ideally. And when you talk about winnable games, putting yourself in seeding, now you talk about winning the division, so you get a home game, right? But at the same point, you'd much rather do that than go on the road. And so those are things that, these are all things that you have to think about when it comes to positioning, seeding in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look at these Raiders, and we want to in a little bit kind of get into what you feel the keys are to beating the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, but I look at these Raiders, and you know, that defense to me, Lincoln, gives them an opportunity now. You said all last year, well, they got to score 30 points minimum to pretty much win any game that they're in. Those days appear to be over, thankfully, for the Raiders. And, you know, you were talking yesterday about what you like about this defense. And, you know, earlier we were talking about Travis Kelce and who's going to defend him. You know, one thing I really like about what this defense has been doing as well, Lincoln, they do guys get beat? Yeah, that's going to happen. You know, you're physically going to get beat from time to time. You saw Jonathan Abram get beat on that pass. He was where he needed to be. He just couldn't make a play on the ball. And, you know, we can come up with all kinds of reasons why that might have happened. But he was where he needed to be. And you can be where you need to be and still get beat. The other guy makes the catch, you know, or the tackle or whatever the case might be. You don't win all the battles just because you're mentally where you need to be. But that's still a far cry from so many times last year where there were breakdowns and guys were just running free, wide open, left and right, and you're wondering, who's supposed to be guarding that guy? Who's supposed to be defending that guy? But that's not happening as much this year. Every once in a while, there's a breakdown. But I also like, Lincoln, how they run to the ball. There's like a lot of gang tackling going on. Guys, you know, flying to the football, multiple guys flying to the football. It just, yeah, the whole operation just looks more efficient and better this year.
When you watch them, they're having fun.
Yeah.
All three phases are having fun. You know, there's very, very small amount of frustration. Sometimes, you know, I've seen, you know, guys get upset about not getting to play in or not understanding who's supposed to go in rotation. I mean, little things like that. But overall, they're having fun. They're having a good time. And it's fun to watch because the thing is that we just want the team to be competitive. And the best way for them to be competitive is to be in almost every game. And playing like it, and that's what we've seen. That's what we've seen them. That's where they're going, and that's why they feel really strong about the rest of the season because you see potentially what this team is capable of doing.
Who is the key to this defense, do you think?
Who's the key?
Yeah, I mean, if you were to an MVP right now of this defense, or is there one? I think there's multiple guys.
Denzel Perryman.
What's that?
Denzel Perryman.
Ooh, and why?
You know what? He's made plays that it's been a long time coming seeing a linebacker in a Raider uniform made. And look, it's a total team effort. Don't get me wrong, because you can sit there and say what you want about, you know, Max and stuff like that and the guys up front. But when they become block eaters, Denzel Perryman has been in there and has made tackles. And that to me, the efficiency and the way that he's made tackles, I think is one of the things that have stood out to me. And of course, getting everybody lined up, because we didn't have that last year. Nick Kwiatkowski struggled with it. And when he was injured, Corey Littleton struggled with it. So we didn't have a true, you know, play caller on defense. And that really hurt him. That really hurt. A lot of times you got people who weren't lined up right. And this is still, you know, you think about it, still a pretty young team. You know what I mean? You talk about the secondary, aside from Casey Hayward. And the fact is that, you know, with Trayvon Mullen being down, they still have played well. You know, so I like Denzel Perryman.
I do like Denzel Perryman, you know, and then you look at Yannick Ngakoue, what he's been doing these last few weeks. He's turned it up a notch. Yeah. Max Crosby's played well. Casey Hayward has played great. And I'm not looking for MVP candidates here for the defense, but, you know, when you start collectively assessing this group and Nate Hobbs and Trayvon Morig, Jonathan Abram has played much better at his new position. Corey Littleton has played better. You mentioned Denzel. The replacements for Trayvon Mullen, Brandon has played really well, you know, out of nowhere, basically. Solomon Thomas has played good. Quentin Jefferson has played well. Jonathan Hankins is playing good football. Carl Nassib is playing good. It's just like, You know, when I asked that question, I was actually kind of surprised that you singled out one, although it's a really good choice because Denzel has been playing great. But, you know, you got to give, obviously, Gus Bradley a lot of credit. But I also think, you know, Mike Mayock and his staff going out and getting some of these players because there was significant turnover on this defense. You know, think about the guys that are here playing their first year with the Raiders. Casey Hayward, Denzel Perryman, Unique Ngakoue, Quentin Jefferson, Solomon Thomas, Trayvon Morig, Nate Hobbs. Those are all guys that were just put into the scene this year. That's pretty good in terms of the talent acquisition, but also Gus Bradley and his staff, Ron Miles, Richard Smith, Rod Marinelli, to kind of get it all together. You don't normally see that much turnover, yet that much success in kind of in the time frame that we're talking about.
Well, I think what really has helped, and it's been a fortune that you really can't put a value on, is the fact when you have guys like Perryman and Denzel and Casey Hayward, as well as other guys, you know, C.J. Wright, who coming over and playing, who played for Gus Bradley, know his system.
Yeah,
because then you don't have to worry about as much of a learning curve, you know, and then you strike gold when you find a Nate Hobbs and you find him in the round and the value for what you're able to get in the level that he plays on. And all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but more importantly, you find a placement for Jonathan Abram. Now he's excelling. He's playing with a lot more confidence and a lot more strut in his stride. That, along with the defensive lineman you're talking about, it's really fortunate for all those things to come together at one time. And you don't normally have it. You know, the fact that they were able to make a trade with Carolina Panthers to get Denzel Perryman for little or nothing,
and it's a guy
who's played in the system. You know what I mean? He's played in Gus Bradley's system and at a high level for the time he's with the Chargers. I mean, that's a blessing in disguise. You know what I mean?
So yeah, I mean, because they were like, how are they going to replace Nicholas Morrow?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, there was a time where in a preseason where we had no linebackers. They were scraping the bottom of the barrel. And then all of a sudden you're able to, you know, get a linebacker core the way they're playing. So it's impressive.
By the way, we mentioned earlier the two high safety system that seems to be giving the Kansas City Chiefs trouble this year. And that's not what the Raiders run. Remember, they run, they have, you know, Trayvon Morig is the free safety. Jonathan Abram is basically a box safety playing closer to the line of scrimmage. So that isn't what the you know, Raiders
run. Now they can do it. They'll have to use their dime to do it, but they can do it. They have a way to play that very similar system, but they have to use it out of their dime. And they would bring in Dalen Levitt to play along with Morig. That's their part of their dime package. Now the only problem with that is that it makes you incredibly soft up front against the run.
Well, here's what Gus Bradley had to say. I'm going to read the quote on what he had to say about his defense. You know, the question we asked earlier, do you do what the other teams have been doing or do you do what you do and just take your chances that way? And by the way, the Raiders have been doing it at a high level, so it's not like a huge gamble, but it would be going against the grain on what teams have been doing to slow down the Kansas City Chiefs this year. And this is what Gus Bradley said. Well, on the breakdowns, you watch a lot of teams and see how they try to attack them and what works for them and what causes them difficulties. Some of it is just they have had opportunities to make plays. There's guys open, and maybe like I said, it was a tip ball here or a tip ball there or an incompletion at a critical time. They can get in a groove at any time, so I think it's a combination. You look at past films and see what teams are doing that have had some success against them, and then you also incorporate what you do. I just take that to believe, no, I'm doing what we're going to do what we do. We're going to, you know, obviously you game plan specific for a team that's coming up, and, you know, this team being the Kansas City Chiefs, but I don't think they're going to deviate so much from what they do. And I think that in talking to Gus Bradley, his impression anyway was that it might be a little bit deceiving, you know, in terms of what's actually stopping the Kansas City Chiefs. In his estimation, there's just been some bad luck as well. Some open guys that Patrick Mahomes normally would hit that he hasn't completed the pass to, or there's a tip ball here or a tip ball there. So it'll be interesting to see. Or he could be playing possum too, Lincoln. You know, he's not going to give away the game plan.
I will say this. I watched the Giants game live on Monday night when they had it, when they played. And then I also watched the film, All 22. And I noticed there was a couple times, especially when Kansas City was on offense, that they primarily had plays for either Travis Kelce or Tyreek Hill. And the other receivers just didn't run their routes, and fully run their routes, because they knew they weren't going to get the ball.
Oh.
That's something that's coaching. And I've seen it happen to many teams, especially when you try to isolate players or try to get them involved early. With that being said, you know, you're never going to completely stop the Kansas City Chiefs. You can negate a lot of things by they doing by two ways. And last year was a case in point when these two teams played each other. It's exactly what John Gruden did in the first time they played in Kansas City, where he owned the time of possession outright, clearly outright, and had big plays and scored points that made it harder on the Kansas City Chiefs. The second time when they played in Allegiant, it was a reversal. It was a reversal. The Chiefs did that. They held on time of possession, and then more importantly, they were scoring touchdowns. It still was a close game. It was going back and forth, but they really wanted to keep the ball out of the Raiders' hands offensively, and that's always a strategy. Win the time of possession, win the turnover battle, you're likely to win a football game, but you want to force the other guy to make mistakes.
Absolutely.
To me, one of the biggest things about it when you're playing the Chiefs is that you got to make sure you score touchdowns.
Yeah,
every possession, you got to score touchdowns.
Definitely. And when we come back, we're going to get Lincoln's keys to the game. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio 920 AM on a Thursday.
No one gets you closer to the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy.
The one thing that hurts you in cover three is vertical routes. You know, and that's what Patrick Mahomes sees. He sees, he's not stupid. He's going to look at that tape and he sees all his cover three, and that's why he said he's going to continue to take shots. When you run four and five verticals, that's the most difficult thing for a cover three defense to try to defend, and I think you're going to continue to see that. But, yeah, but what I would like to see, Gus, is evolve your cover three a little bit, okay? You got four good, really, you know, guys that can get to the quarterback, and they're very active up front. But what if you brought Jonathan Abram and you start bringing him? He's a really good player, but you're not including him in the defense. He has to make more plays. I would like to see him play a little bit more like Jamal Adams, where he's blitzing, he's making negative plays in the backfield, he's putting pressure on the quarterback. I like Jonathan Abram, but it's just he's not making enough plays for the type of talent that he has, and that falls on his defense coordinator.
Lincoln Kennedy, do you agree?
Who was that?
Rodney Harrison. Rodney, yeah, right?
Yeah. Here's the thing.
Yeah.
I understand what he's trying to say. I don't necessarily agree with it because the Raiders haven't had the blitz.
Exactly.
They've been able to generate pressure before. So why show or do something if you don't need to do it?
Right.
I mean,
go ahead.
I was just going to say Jonathan Abram's been in position to make plays. I think he's made plays, whether it's in the run game or something like that. Before. I know what Rodney's saying about the verticals, but you know, you mentioned Jamal Adams. If you put Jamal Adams in coverage, he's a liability too.
No doubt about it. And he hasn't really even been playing that good for the Seattle Seahawks either.
Well, I mean, he's a thumper.
Yeah.
So he's an enforcer. That's what he does. But he is not a good coverage safety. So you don't want him in space, just like you don't want Jonathan Abram, just like you don't want Tyrann Mathieu. There are guys that you don't want in space. And you're right. The verticals make it hard on a cover three. That's why you'll probably see in more cases is more of a dime look. But it makes you softer up front.
Right. The Raiders' pass defense has been good enough for sure. At sometimes it's been outstanding. They gave up 110 yards, I think, on Sunday against the Giants. Yeah, it was Daniel Jones, but still, that's pretty darn good against any NFL team. And as we saw last year, everybody was shredding them last year. So it's nothing to turn your nose up on. So I don't think they even need Jonathan Abram right now to do what Rodney is talking about, because like you said, they're getting plenty of the pressure from their front four, and that allows them to drop the seven back and make plays. It doesn't always have to be sexy big plays. It just get the other team off the field. That's all you're looking to do. Do you want turnovers? Turnovers are definitely coming for the Raiders in terms of forcing them. They were on the wrong side of it on Sunday, but that's because the offense was careless with the ball. So, yeah, it seems like sometimes people get caught up in the chance taking and, you know, the big play and all that kind of stuff. But I'll say this, Lincoln, on five of those types of blitzes that he's talking about, let's say, you might get one sack out of it, but you also might be giving up some big plays as a result of it too. And that's what the Raiders are trying to avoid.
To be fair and to be honest, especially when it comes to this particular situation, none of the quarterbacks the Raiders have faced are Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
You know, up until this point. So, yeah. You know, it's one of the things where you're going to sit there and say, okay, we're going to blitz Patrick, but then you give up the – you put, you know, one-on-one coverage or you put man coverage on one of their speedy receivers and get torched, give up a big play.
Right.
As I said, you don't need it. They've blitzed Jonathan Abram. They've blitzed Nate Hobbs. They've mm-hmm. done nickel blitzes. I've seen safety blitzes. I've seen I've seen dogs and everything. They just haven't had the necessity to do it frequently because they've had the luxury of getting a pass rush.
Right. You're going to obviously change it up from time to time. But I just think that how Jonathan Abram is being used, and that's why, you know, hearing Rodney say it's the defensive coordinator's fault, I give the defensive coordinator all the credit for putting Jonathan Abram in the best possible position for him to succeed. And he's playing so much better than he has in the past. Let's start with that. You know, if down the road, you know, you want to start implementing that a little bit more, great. But like you said, right now you don't need it. Anyway, as we get to Sunday and we start looking ahead to Sunday night at Allegiant Stadium, Lincoln Kennedy, I need your keys, man, on how the Raiders can forge a path to a big win over the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday.
First of all, defensively, they have got to do a better job at stopping the run. I think the Giants, and I don't have it right up in front of me, but for the most part, there were times where the Giants were averaging 6 yards a crack on the run.
Right.
Oh, the Chiefs are their yearly average are about 4.6, and that's usually where the Raiders have been in past games when I've paid attention to this run stat. But to me, it's because I don't want to have a team come in and be able to run and pass against a team. I want to make them one-dimensional. You want to take the run away. I think they have the ability to do it. I've seen at times where they are playing on the other side of the ball, where you're getting pushed from the interior, you're getting into the backfield, and you're making a presence felt. So I really think they got to slow down that run attack. Now, Kansas City's not a very good run team, but you don't want to get them started to where they have, you know, run and pass at their disposal. That's the first thing. Second thing is you got to score touchdowns. That's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You got to score touchdowns. And I'm not one of these guys who says, you know, Daniel Carlson, you're going to go out there and make six kicks. No. And then, unless they're extra points, that's all I'm looking for.
Right.
And then even then he wants to struggle because, anyways, that's long story short.
Oh. Okay.
But yeah, just you want to get to Patrick. You want to harass him. You want to make him throw. You don't want to allow him to sit back and allow some of these deep routes to develop because he's going to take his shots. You just want to make sure you're in position to not get beat deep. Nobody gets behind you if you're Trayvon Moehrig or any other safety out there.
Yeah, I agree with all of those things. And I think that, coming off the performance that they had against Sunday, I'll give them a mulligan on that game. They still should have won the game. That kind of shows how much progress the Raiders have made as a football team, that even playing as kind of bad as they did in situational football, because they were actually playing pretty good up until red zone situations. But they still had a chance to win that game, probably should have won that game, but it is what it is. Coming off of that, coming back home, playing at Allegiant Stadium, knowing what the stakes are with a win like this to get to 6-3, everybody's been talking about got to get to 6-3. I think they get to Patrick Mahomes. I think there's going to be three sacks in that range. And I think they may even force an interception or maybe even two. And I think the Raiders offense, Lincoln, let's talk about that real quick. Where do you see them attacking the Chiefs most?
Create like matchup problems. You know, I told you about, you know, Jonathan Abrams from time being coverage matchup problem. Well, you want to go after Sorensen, 49. You want to try to get Tyrann Mathieu in coverage. You also want to try to use the their aggressive nature with their pass rush against them, with screens and draws and keep them on their heels. I think you have the ability to do that. But all in all, you've got you have the wherewithal and the ability to spread the ball around. I think the Raiders have enough playmakers that have been established that they're going to have time in the pocket. Derek's going to have time to get rid of the football, survey the field. But you don't want to make it a habit of just trying to trying to fix in on one guy or one or two guys. You want to spread the ball around.
They don't need to. You know, Kenyon Drake's been playing good. Josh Jacobs isn't playing better. He had a good game. Darren Waller, obviously, you know, you go up and down the lineup. They don't have to force it, but it sure would be a good thing, I think, for them if they can hit on a couple of those with DeSean Jackson. But we shall see. Lincoln Kennedy, thank you so much. I will see you Sunday at Allegiant Stadium. Appreciate all the hard work and insight. You know that. Damon Cotton, thank you so much for everything that you do at home base. Jason McCormick from Station Casinos, STN Sports. Love hearing what that side of the aisle thinks about these games, including the Raiders against the Chiefs. To all our callers, listeners, thank you for the support. You're why we do this. I'll be back at it tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m., live from the Treasure Island, the Golden Circle Sportsbook at the TI. If you're in Las Vegas, come join me and let's kick this weekend off in a major way. Of course, we'll be out Saturday over at Rockstar Bar and Grill, our normal spot the day before games. Hope to see everybody out there 5 o'clock till whenever you're in the huddle. Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation in the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the Beyond Nicotine experience with its Beyond Tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.